Thank you, Steve. Hi, guys. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Every Friday, we talk to Alexander Zalbin, managing editor of Decider.com. And it's Friday, and we're talking to Alexander Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. Hi, Alex.
Hi, that's a weird coincidence that it happens on the day, and we're doing that.
Right, it's crazy.
Weird.
Anything can happen. Alex, I have to tell you, I had never seen a second of the show The Masked Singer, and I came upon it the other day quite by accident, and I have to say it's one of the dumbest things. I was like watching a nightmare play out on my TV.
But did you like it?
No, I hated it.
Okay.
How in the world is this a TV show, and why are people enjoying it? Because I don't get it.
Well, I think the first question answers the second question, that it's like watching a car crash fever dream every single time you tune in. For those who haven't watched it, it's a bunch of celebrities dressed in a mask. They're kind of performing songs, but not for too long. I think they made them even shorter this season. They only sing for, I don't know, conservatively 5 to 10 seconds or so over the course of the show. And then a couple of judges make really terrible guesses as to who they are. And then one person is unmasked at the end, and it's usually somebody of the level of, like, Paul Schaefer or Ninja, the famous Twitch streamer, that sort of thing. It's absolutely bonkers. I think what makes it work, frankly, is the costumes more than anything, because they're completely outrageous and over the top. The rest of the show, you can take or leave. But that's why I think people are sparking to it. And also the hope that there might eventually be some celebrity who is actually shocking.
That's not going to happen.
Who's the biggest name that has been revealed? Because I've never watched a second of this show.
They had the first one who was ever revealed was Antonio Brown, who was a big deal for some folks. I think Paul Schaefer is fine. T-Pain was the winner last season, which was genuinely surprising. But they always make guesses on the show like, oh, is that Beyonce under there? Is that maybe Tom Hiddleston? And you're like, no, it's not.
It never will be.
You know what it reminds me of, Alex, is every once in a while, you'll accidentally come across a clip of some show that they show in Bulgaria or somewhere, and you just go, wow, that's what passes for entertainment in Bulgaria. I'm glad I live in the United States. And now that's what we're showing in the United States now.
Well, it started, I believe, as a South Korean show called King of the Masked Singer, and it was completely outrageous there. The thing that actually made that work was, I believe they only had the contestants come on for one show versus the Voice or American Idol style that they're doing here. So they actually had one episode where Ryan Reynolds was the surprise guest.
That's impressive.
Yeah, so very impressive. Unfortunately, they haven't done that at all with the American version, but one can always hope.
So the stars there, they know it's a one-week commitment. They can show up and tape it and go home, but here you'd have to be on for a whole season maybe, right?
Exactly. So they had people like, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on his name, David Cassidy, I guess. Was that it?
David Cassidy? Because he died.
Oh,
which would be better than being on The Masked Singer, in my opinion.
Oh, Bill, that is hateful.
I would rather die than be on The Masked Singer.
Oh, no. Regardless, they have people who travel back and forth from it. But, you know, it's a very C, D, E, maybe even lower list of celebrities who are doing the show.
Yeah. It can't last much beyond one more season, right? At some point, people are going to get wise to the fact that it's stupid, right?
People love it. Is it doing okay ratings-wise?
It is one of the few successful broadcast shows right now. That doesn't mean that it's an enormous hit where tens of millions of people are watching it. But by current broadcast standards, you have, I believe, somewhere between 7 and 10 million people watching it per week. It's already been greenlit for a third season that's premiering after the Super Bowl. So you're going to be living with it for a while longer.
It's on after the Super Bowl.
It is.
Well, good. No one will be late the next day because we won't watch it. Right. Although I can't even say that because people are watching it.
I don't get it. I have no idea. All right, let's talk about better things. Paul Rudd, one of the most likable guys in all of show business, has his own show on Netflix. What is it?
Two Paul Rudds.
Well, two Paul Rudds.
It's two Paul Rudds. It's called Living With Yourself, and it's on Netflix today. It's 8 episodes, half-hour comedy, kind of comedy, kind of drama. Excuse me. Just to spoil a little bit of the beginning, there's a whole cloning thing that goes on where you end up with two Paul Rudds in the first episode. They don't follow the sci-fi of it all too much, so if you're not into those sort of shows, the show also is very uninterested with that sort of thing. It's more about watching Paul Rudd play two characters, one that's a sad sack character, one that's a regular very charming, very handsome Paul Rudd. And I personally did not love the show, but Paul Rudd is very engaging the entire time. And several of our viewers disagreed and actually did love the show. So either way, at half hour, at eight episodes, it's an easy watch. And if you want to spoiler, see Paul Rudd make out with himself, definitely check out the show.
I'm in. I was looking for it last night. I didn't realize it wasn't out yet. Yeah. So I will be watching it.
And people don't realize, even though we know him now as a movie actor, I think his first sitcom experience was on Friends, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is him returning to TV, and even though he is actually one of the hottest movie actors and one of the most expensive movie actors right now, this clearly is a passion project for him. It's not quite as serious, but it sort of feels like his Barry was for Bill Hader sort of thing, where he's trying out and flexing himself with some different things.
He's so good. Did I read this right? Did Stranger Things just announce that they were the most watched TV series on Netflix, the third season of Stranger Things? That broke the record for how many viewers it got. Did I see that right?
Yes, you did see that right. Millions and millions of people watched the third season of Stranger Things. This is obviously a huge deal for Netflix. They're already in production on the fourth season, so you don't have to worry about that. So obviously, there are some characters' fates who are left hanging in the balance. But according to Netflix, they say 64 million households watched Stranger Things in the first month. The reason I clarify that is Netflix is very cagey in terms of their viewing numbers.
Yeah.
So it's unclear exactly how many people actually watched it. The way that they characterize it is by households. So that means if there's, say, four accounts in a household, it could be four people watching that. It could be more than that. It also doesn't specify how many episodes they watched or anything like that. But regardless, 64 million is a big number. So it's a big, big show still.
Alex, they did similar things when the movie Bird Box came out on Netflix. They were very secretive. All they said was a lot of people watched it. It broke all kinds of records. Why are they holding back on information? What do they have to lose in telling us the numbers?
Well, the suspicion from a lot of TV critics are the numbers aren't quite as big as they're saying, or that perhaps, unlike most broadcast numbers, which are very transparent in terms of time watched and ages watched and everything, they're not sharing that stuff. So are they saying that somebody tunes in, like accidentally clicks on Stranger Things when that ad pops up on the top of the screen and then goes in and that's a view?
Yeah.
Is that not a view? It could mean something like that. It also could just mean this is how they have decided to categorize it. From a entertainment journalist perspective, the thing that's the most frustrating is they're not consistent with the way they characterize their numbers. So sometimes they'll say 64 million households. Sometimes they'll say number of people. Sometimes they'll say families, accounts. There's no standard there. There's nobody checking on them. So it makes the whole thing, you squint your eyes a little bit whenever they put out those numbers.
Can I ask you one other quick question about Stranger Things? A friend of mine told me that there is a show on that's like Stranger Things. I know Halloween is coming up and people like to be scared. There's a show on called Dark, I think, that's like a German version of Stranger Things. Do you know the show at all?
I do. First of all, it is all in German, and the default setting on Netflix for the show, this is actually a big deal, is set to dubbing rather than the subtitles.
Yeah.
Immediately change your settings. I first watched the show. It's sort of a weird time travel, intergenerational family thing set in a small town. There's missing kids, all this stuff going on. I remember very distinctly watching the first episode with the dubbing and thinking, wow, this is terrible. And then I turned on the subtitles and immediately it became 1,000 times better.
Oh, all right.
People are absolutely obsessed with the show. One of our writers, Kayla Cobb, has written extensively about it on the site. And once you've watched it, go back and read through her guides because it's very confusing. Mm-hmm. But she's done a very good job of encapsulating it. But yeah, definitely check that out.
And what's it called? Dark?
Dark.
And where
Dark.
Do we find it?
On
Netflix.
On your German Netflix.
Okay.
I always have Elke Summer come to my house and translate for me.
We have to take a break, but we talked to Yousef Salam earlier this week, and When They See Us is a Netflix miniseries, 5 episodes about the Central Park 5. Jasmine told me about it. I've seen it. I love it. And I'm recommending it to everyone out there, too. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Are you familiar with that, Alexander?
I am. That's a phenomenal miniseries. So it's definitely, it's hard to watch at points, but yes, it's so good and so necessary.
And it's weird because we talked to Yousef Salam, who is no longer in prison, and Felicity Huffman is in the movie and in prison while I watch this. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Very much so. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break and then more with Alex Zelbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. We're at 312-981-7200. If you have any questions, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Alexander Zelbin is here. He's the managing editor of Decider.com. He knows his television, and there's a bunch to see on TV, including HBO's new TV version of Watchmen. What do you know about it, Alex?
Well, I know that it's fantastic. I've seen the first couple of episodes, and without getting into any spoilers, it is a sort of sequel to the comic book series. People may know it from the feature film, but it is picking up directly from the comic book series from the 1980s. There's some little differences there, but ultimately you don't have to worry about it too much. It is created by Damon Lindelof, who did Lost and The Leftovers, and it stars Regina King, Don Johnson, Jeremy Irons, and a bunch of other folks. The cast is fantastic. It's a very... I hesitate to use dark, even though it is dark superhero series, because there's some exciting superhero parts, there's some fun parts. And for those who are not into superhero series, it uses the tropes without explicitly being like people with superpowers. It's also very heavily about race in America, where the previous comic book was all about nuclear threat and nuclear anxiety. What Dan Lindelof has said is he thought the most existential threat facing mankind right now is racism, and that's what they delve into head-on from pretty much the first frame. So it's visually exciting. The acting is fantastic. It's beautifully filmed. Cannot recommend it highly enough. And that's 9 p.m. on HBO. It premieres.
I loved that movie. That was one of my favorite movies, The Watchmen, Zack Snyder's movie. Loved it.
Yeah. I will say, if you're a fan of that, the closest comparison, Jackie Earle Haley, who played Rorschach in the movie, they have some interesting twists on the Rorschach character in this, but again, I won't spoil. But Tim Blake Nelson plays a very similar character in this show, and Tim Blake Nelson is kind of the same guy as Jackie Earle Haley, so it's fun to see him on screen playing a version of that role.
Oh, good. Very good. So that's on HBO on Sunday night. The novel Looking for Alaska has been adapted by Hulu. Tell us more.
Yeah, so this is John Green's novel from about 20 years ago. It's, I believe, his first novel. He also wrote Paper Towns and Fault in Our Stars, among other things. I really love this series. All of the episodes are on Hulu right now. It's about a kid who goes to a very weird boarding school that's sort of half summer camp, half boarding school, though it's based on John Green's real experiences. It's romantic. It's sad. It has a lot of stuff to say about the teen experience. And there's some great performances, particularly by Christine Froseth, who's a very young actress who's up and coming as Alaska, the main character of the title.
Will it tug at my heartstrings?
It definitely 100% will, yes.
Okay, good, because they need to be tugged. It's been a while. It's been too long. What about Modern Love over on Prime Video? What can you tell us about this, Alex?
Sure. This is a drama anthology dropped today. There are, I believe, 8 episodes of it, and it's based on the New York Times column of the same name. So each episode is very much its own thing, but they're all like little half-hour-long romantic comedies. Because it's an anthology, some are better than others. You may like some other more than others. The first episode stars Christine Milioti from The Mother, from How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
And it's a fun, weird little tale about her and her New York doorman. My absolute favorite one was Dev Patel and Catherine Kinnear are in these dual stories where she is interviewing him about his new dating app, but it turns out he has, of course, some dating challenges of his own. It's very romantic, very fun. A lot of the episodes are written and created by John Carney, who did Once, which was a hit film a couple of years ago.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, I recommend checking it out. Again, some you like, some don't work as much, but it's a quick watch.
Alex, I wanted to talk to you about something. I have finally joined the masses of people who watched and completed Fleabag. Absolutely loved that. When we spoke last time, you said, without giving anything away, it seems to be pretty much wrapped up at the end. I think it could go both ways. I think they could bring it back.
I don't want to get into spoilers too much. But there's certainly like a very definitive note that Phoebe Waller-Bridge, the actress who wrote it and stars in it, gives you right at the end there.
Yes.
That
I had to look it up.
Yeah.
I did.
To me, it indicated that she's reached a place where she's settled and moved on emotionally from where she's been in the series. But
it may come back.
Exactly. If she had a good idea, I think she wouldn't turn away from doing it.
All right. I just need a little bit of hope dangled in front
of
me. That's all I want,
Alex.
I'm
not asking for a lot. Alex, less than a minute. We only have about 20 seconds, but real quick, a texter wants to know which streaming service, in your opinion, offers the best shows out of Netflix, Amazon, HBO, Showtime. Is there one that's far and above the other, or they're all pretty equal?
Oh, my goodness. This is a tough question. They all offer different things, but I tend towards Hulu just because they have a mix of some increasingly good original shows, but also you get all the broadcast stuff at the same time. So if you're missing things, you can check out most networks the same day. So in terms of the value, it's pretty good. Little asterisk there, Disney Plus is launching on November 12th,
yeah,
and their launch lineup is absolutely out of control. So if you're a fan of Disney stuff, that's the one that's going to be a must-have.
Excellent. Alex, fun to talk to you. Learned a lot, and we'll talk to you a week from today.
Sounds good. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Alex Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. Break, some news, more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.